Hello and welcome to an audio session of Authorized Transmissions by EMS Solutions at ems-safety.com. My name is Jim Hoffman, and some of you might be familiar with these audio interviews. Today, we're going to be welcoming Dr. Jennifer Miles, and I've been reading Dr. Jen's articles on EMS provider health and well-being on EMS1.com, and I've actually it's reinforced to me how important our health as healthcare providers is, and it's not only in performing our day-to-day job, but also in staying healthy to avoid injury and illness. We're going to see if Dr. Jen is on the line with us right now and get this going on here.
I'm right here, Jim.
Hi, Dr. Jen. Welcome. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
Dr. Jen, not everyone listening might know who you are or may not have seen some of your articles, and I'm just wondering if you can maybe just give us a little background on yourself and how you've been involved in EMS over the years.
Well, I guess the start would be I started lifting weights and doing some intense strength training in high school. I became a personal trainer when I was 18 and a massage therapist when I was 19 and a sports trainer when I was 20. And worked with the athletes at my college, because I was an athlete, as a sports trainer, taping and bracing and working with sports injuries there. Then I went to chiropractic school, where I specialized in sports med and injury rehab, and went through the certified chiropractic sports physician program. And then I started private practice in 1993. And during the first few years of practice, I became a strength and conditioning coach and a team doctor at sports teams in my area, and realized that it might be important for me to have my EMT, so I became certified as an EMT. And then I guess just from referrals, I started working with a lot of firefighters and EMTs and paramedics and athletes with their injuries, particularly work injuries with many EMS people. It's low back, shoulders, knees, that sort of thing. And through the course of care of treating these people, eventually when they get better, they get to a phase where they need strengthening so that they can go back to work. And I used to get a whole lot of questions about, you know, what would I do so I wouldn't get this injury again? Or how would I train so I could do my job without getting injured? And eventually I just started helping them, like going to the gym with them and training them and working out with them, kind of in my spare time, if there was any actual spare time. And then eventually I came across a guy named Fire Captain Bob, and he started sending me females who were aspiring firefighters and EMS workers, and they basically wanted to get fit and get strong and pass their CPAT and be able to do the job. And that kind of led me into training and working with them and eventually putting on paper training plans where I would help these people. And eventually I built a website and tried to help these people get fit and stay healthy. And so here I am.
Wow. Well, that's great background. I was mentioning in the very beginning of the session here that staying healthy for providers, it not only helps us perform our job every day, but like you have mentioned too, it also kind of helps us from preventing from getting injured or becoming ill. And I was wondering, what do you think are the primary factors that usually leads to EMS or firefighter injury and illness?
I'd say, first of all, being deconditioned. You know, many people get very fit in order to get the job and get through the academy or whatever, and then they kind of back off, and this kind of deconditioning due to a lack of vigorous exercise really can lead to a lot of injuries, and more specifically a lack of the actual proper focused job specific training, not just working out but job specific training. Like, you know, many people run marathons, and that's how they stay fit, and I've even run a bunch of marathons, and it's great, but it doesn't make anybody a more effective or less apt to be injured EMS worker or firefighter. High-intensity interval training with heavier resistance and ranges of motion, actually imitating the job activities that really need to be done, are very important, and I've find that a lot of people are not doing this. Nutrition is huge, and of course stress. Everybody knows that stress reduction is really important for people in this field, because if they become stressed out, it adds to their blood pressure problems, and then they can have heart problems and cardiovascular disease. Right. So,
yeah, so you're saying in a lot of people, once they get the job and they pass an academy or whatever requirements, instead of continuing on, they kind of fall into the rut of sitting at the station house or whatever and kind of
mm-hmm.
watching TV and
mm-hmm.
just waiting for the
mm-hmm.
calls to come in rather than staying on top of it.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Or even if they are, they don't necessarily do the right kind of exercise.
Right, right. Well, the nature of EMS a lot of times requires, you know, a lot of people to live in the ambulance, you know, and doesn't give a lot of time for us to watch what we eat. And I'm wondering if you have any ideas on how, you know, a lot of people can avoid that easy way out of, you know, let's say getting that fast food meal, or if you have any thoughts on, you know, what people can eat from, let's say, the fast food places that may not be all that bad for us in the long run.
Mm-hmm. Well, I always tell the people that I'm working with to pack a cooler, get up a little bit extra early in the morning before they go to their shift, and pack a cooler and make a deal with your partner that you're not going to go through any drive-thrus. And here's the key. Don't take money on your shift. If you don't have any money in your pocket, you can't go through the drive-thru. And you're forced to eat what's in the cooler. And in the cooler, I would only pack really healthy food, like a turkey sandwich on whole wheat, or even two if it's a long shift, and apple, carrots, maybe a handful of mixed raw nuts, some hard-boiled egg whites, water, any other kind of fruit or vegetable you might like, and then in the wintertime, like hot soup or something, and maybe even some extra healthy food if the shift is longer than you thought it would be. So, but
right.
I don't really have any suggestions in terms of fast food, except to suggest that in my eyes, it's all bad.
Yeah.
Because even Taco Bell, which is some people say is healthier, I'm not quite sure whether they cook those beans with lard or not. I don't know.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So
even the salads, I don't know, or even a lot of these places now, too, they offer the salad, you know, meals as well. I'm not sure how great that is for you. You know, I'm sure it's better than getting the burger or the chicken sandwich, but I don't know how good it is for you getting the salad as opposed to just bringing your own, you know, your own salad.
I would say it doesn't even compare to the food that one could pack from their own refrigerator. And these salads, a lot of the time, are made from iceberg lettuce instead of the rich colored, like spring greens type of salads. And
mm-hmm.
iceberg lettuce really doesn't have any nutritive value. It has some water in it,
water,
and a little
right?
bit of cellulose,
yeah,
but that's it. It's really devoid
it.
Of
yeah.
nutrients. Yeah. And if
yeah.
one had to choose between a chicken breast sandwich and a hamburger, everybody knows that they would choose a chicken breast sandwich, but then you're smelling the French fries when you're at the drive-thru and, you know, maybe
right.
making these bad decisions.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, even myself, honestly, over the past, like, year and a half, I wound up putting on, like, almost, you know, 15, 20 pounds due to, you know, the lifestyle I was leading and just doing the easy way out and going to the fast food places. And I started doing, like you mentioned, you know, bringing a cooler with my own food in it. And I actually started doing it more as a financial issue because it was just cheaper for me to bring ready-made
right.
food from home than buying the fast food stuff. And I'm and this kind of led me to try to, you know, watching my weight more, watching what I'm eating more, and kind of going on a little bit of, you know, on a diet and watching what I'm eating. And I'm wondering, you know, a lot of people try to diet while they're at work. I know a lot of people that try to do it, and they always wind up falling off and, you know, grabbing something quick because it's very busy and they don't have time to, you know, get to the microwave oven, and they don't have, you know, enough time to prepare what they brought. So they'll just go ahead and stop and grab a slice of pizza or something like that. And do you have – I mean, I know you mentioned, you know, bringing a cooler and all, and – do you have anything you can maybe give that might help people stick to the diet plan while they're working and maybe avoid that? I mean, is it just bringing more of a variety in the cooler, you think, to stay on an actual diet?
I think variety is key, yes, I mean, nutritionally speaking. But I really can't say that I believe in diets. I just don't think they work. I really don't. Packing a good, healthy cooler full of food long-term is what works. The hard part and the negativity about diets is when a person goes on a diet, they get this negative feedback loop of emotional self-abuse, as it were, if they fall off the wagon. And then they beat
right.
themselves up instead of kind of saying to themselves, okay, I did it, it's over, I'm just going to not do it for today.
Right.
And that kind of positive reinforcement, it's just that it goes, you know, it like goes out the window to a degree if the negative feedback is there instead of the positive feedback of, okay, I messed up, and that's okay because today I'm not going to do it. I know I did
yeah.
it yesterday, but that's over, the forgiveness part.
Right.
So,
and eating right is you know, it's important, and it helps keep weight down and all, and it also helps avoid illnesses, you know, heart disease and diabetes and high blood pressure, like you had mentioned before. And I think it's also important in keeping the weight down as far as avoiding injury while we're working. And in your opinion, what do you think the chances are? Do you think the chances increase if people are overweight and they're doing these jobs, as far as, you know, getting injured, the increase of injury is higher for those that might be a little bit overweight?
I think it is. I think it is definitely an increased risk factor. Being overweight and having, say, a pendulous abdomen, a person who has more weight in the front, say if their stomach is hanging over their belt, this is a sign that their core is weak and deconditioned. Okay, so mm-hmm. that's a sign that those muscles are weak. In addition to that, that stomach in the front changes the person's center of gravity. And then, in addition to that, forward bending, lifting, and twisting, carrying patients and lifting things, increases the pressure inside the disc in the low back. So now you have the pendulous abdomen, the weak core, and the forward center of gravity. And all of this doesn't just injure the disc, it makes the musculature in the low back have to work harder, which we already said was probably pretty deconditioned anyway. And
right.
in addition to that, think about this. If you're carrying an extra 20 pounds and you're trying to, say, move a patient and you twist on your knee wrong, if you are lighter, you're less likely to torque and tear your meniscus. I mean, it's just a known fact.
Sure.
So it leads to more injuries and accelerates degeneration in the lower body joints, the hips, the knees, the ankles, and those areas. So it's
right.
bad all the way around. Without sounding judgmental, I'm not trying
right.
to be
no,
judgmental
of course.
About it, but
well, you know, I always think about that, and I'm lucky, you know, in the 16 or so much years I've been doing it, I've only kind of injured my back one time, you know, the entire
mm-hmm.
time of working. I think a big part of that is because I did work out a lot and I did try to stay, you know, somewhat, you know, good shape until recently when I kind of, you know, went a little hog wild with myself. But
mm-hmm.
I know earlier you had mentioned treating a lot of EMS people and firefighters that get injuries to their back and their shoulders, which a lot of times is very common for EMS providers. And you mentioned also even injury to the knees. And a lot of times these injuries can happen even if people are in good condition because of poor lifting techniques. And I'm wondering if you have any ideas that people can do to kind of prevent these type of injuries other than, you know, just trying to work out, if there's anything they can do when doing it.
Well, without a specific person and knowing exactly what's wrong with them, I really don't feel comfortable giving any specific recommendations regarding this, like on a phone interview. But I can say this, that proper lifting technique is really important, like you said. Trunk stabilization and core work is really important. Rotator cuff work is really important. And actually, I have four great articles, those three and then a knee, on my website on fireagility.com that people can read with pictures and a whole plan of how to deal with those kinds of things and exactly what needs to be done to make them strong and healthy in their knees and low backs
great.
And shoulders. So
that's great.
And it's free.
Yeah, that's even better, right? Free is for me, right?
Right, right.
What about if is there anything you could think of that people can do while they're at work that might be able to help them, like, you know, simple bending or stretching things that might help lessen those chances, or is it just go back to what you had just mentioned, the individual person?
Well, a lot of times it does go back to the individual person if they're already injured. But that's kind of a loaded question, so it'll take, bear with me. I'll try to answer all that. It's a bigger question than just than the, you know, two lines. So let's see. So simple exercises at work. If we're talking about somebody who's in an ambulance all the time, that's what I'm thinking we're talking about,
right,
versus somebody who's in the firehouse where they might have weight machines and stuff. So,
right.
So I hear that those people in the ambulance never get a break. They go from one call to the next call to the next call. And if that is in fact the case, the only thing that I feel like they could do in the ambulance when they're riding around is say isometric ab exercises or isometric exercises using one body part and pushing it against another, you know, like pushing your hands together or something like that. But, you know, I got to thinking about this when you gave me these questions, and you know, outside the rig is something completely different. If the people have a break and they are between calls, then, of course, they might have 3 or 5 minutes to do something, and every little bit helps. And if it were me and I had a call and then I had a 5-minute break, I might find a parking lot and get out and do a little circuit once until the next call came, if that was allowed and if I could do that and I had time and space. Something like 20 walking lunges, and then 50 crunches or bicycle abs, and then 20 wide grip push-ups. If there was a bar anywhere around, you could do, you know, 5 or 10 chin-ups or pull-ups, whatever you could do, and then get back in the rig and just go. And, of course, they'd have to be really careful to use proper form, especially with the lunges in their knees, and they'd have to be careful in their push-ups to use proper form so they wouldn't get injured. But if you think about it, if you did a circuit like that between every call and you did it all day long, you could get in really good shape, and it would take 2 or 3 minutes each time. That's all. And it could be huge for some people. You know, and as for stretching, it's great when properly applied, and, you know, long term, flexibility is great for injury prevention, and it's important to stretch about 5 or 10 minutes every day. And I, in fact, force myself to stretch 5 or 10 minutes per hour of exercise that I do. That's my rule, 5 to 10 minutes per hour. But I don't generally recommend static stretching, you know, where you hold a stretch right before vigorous exercise or heavy lifting, because it actually can lead to more injuries than stretching at all. When you stretch a muscle and hold it, it really does relax the muscle. And it causes a physiologic change in the muscle fibers itself, and then the muscle for a short period of time can become weaker. And so then stressing it can actually cause problems. So over the long run, stretching is great when you do it at night or after your workout or some other time right before vigorous exercise. But the key for preventing these kinds of injuries is more of an active warm-up and dynamic stretching right before vigorous exercise. And by this, I mean lengthening and moving but not bouncing the muscles and the joints in the area in ranges of motion that would mimic the thing that you're about to do, the exercise that you're about to do. But it would be unloaded, no resistance. It would just be something where you move the joint through the range of motion, trying to loosen it up and get things moving. So,
I gotcha.
Yeah.
That makes sense. That definitely makes sense. I mean, I know we've been talking that, you know, a big part of it is you know, is eating right and getting the proper exercise. And it just seems that a lot of providers, you know, they have a lot of, you know, a little bit of time to work all of that into their, you know, daily routines, you know, especially when a lot of them are working, you know, a second job or a part-time job and they have their family responsibilities. And is there anything you can think of that someone listening might be able to do that could start them on the path of improving their health and maybe get them a little bit motivated and, you know, into start improving their health and their resistance?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, if you're talking about fat burning or cardiovascular exercise and benefit, you know, the rule is that you're supposed to do 20 minutes at a sustained heart rate.
Right.
In the fat burning zone and blah, blah, blah. But you know what? That is not necessarily reality. I mean, it's truly not. For most people, staying healthy entails calories in being less than calories out. if you have more calories in than calories out, you become overweight and deconditioned and weak and, you know, on and on. But if you can increase the muscle mass and your metabolism by exercising even a little bit, like that circuit I was just talking about, even a little bit at a time, you're going to increase the muscle mass and you'll have an afterburn and your metabolism will stay high and you will be less likely to store fat. And that circuit I was talking about, say the 20 walk and lunges, 20 wide grip push-ups and 50 bicycle abs or crunches, or, you know, 10 pull-ups added in there too if there's a bar somewhere. But they wouldn't necessarily get sweaty if they just did one or two of those circuits between every call. And it's a good place to start. You'd have to start with two or three circuits during a given shift and then take a day off of that and then do it again the next time. But and you could work up to 7 or 8 or 10 circuits, you know, in a shift. And walking's always good. It's just, you know, when you're trapped in an ambulance, you know, truly, it's very difficult to get things done. It just is. And
I think they're good tips, though. Like, I think it's good information that you gave, though, as far as, you know, getting a little something done. And, you know, that might be better than doing nothing. And like you said, over a whole shift, it kind of adds up. And then again, you mentioned as far as increasing your metabolism, and that kind of will help you burn those calories even when you're not actually doing anything. You're actually at rest.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, Dr. Jenna, one thing I want to get your opinion on, it's a topic that I've seen in a few EMS forums. I don't know how familiar you are with this topic or not, but it's the idea of gastric bypass and other types of extreme surgery, you know, for people to lose weight. And for some people, the surgeries they have to have. I had a partner once who had to have it done. He was a diabetic, just couldn't lose the weight, and he wound up having that surgery done. And then for others, though, I tend to see that some people just kind of do it as a way to drop that, you know, 100 pounds or so, and you know, kind of a quick fix type thing. And I'm wondering if you think this is a real option for people, or should it be an absolute last resort for them?
Okay, I'll try and answer this without sounding like a jerk. because it's hard. True change is very, very difficult for anybody. True, real, lasting change. And losing 100 pounds requires true change. I feel really bad for people who put on 100 pounds. I really do. I imagine I've been training like a dog since I was 12 years old. I mean, working out really hard since I was 12. If these people had made that choice, they might be where I am fitness-wise, but they didn't, and I can't judge them for that. But I have to imagine what it would do to my psyche if I had something happen and I put on 100 pounds. I'd be devastated. It would have had to have been a devastating happening to make me do that, but it would also be very painful for me emotionally to all of a sudden be so unhealthy. So I know that losing weight's a good positive thing, but it's still change. And be it change in a positive direction or not, it's still very difficult. So in addition to that, like given that base of how difficult would it be to actually lose 100 pounds, like in your partner's situation, sometimes there's a food addiction. I'm not an expert in food addictions. I'm an expert in creating exercise addictions. I'm just kidding. But you know, losing weight in this amount, like 100 pounds, requires huge change. And it's one that the person has to be in significant pain to make them want to change. And addiction makes that even more complex. The problem with bypass surgery is that there's no change there. The surgery gets at the symptom, but never uncovers the problem, meaning the addiction or whatever it is that's making somebody that unhappy that they feel a need with food. The answer to that kind of unhealthiness is a huge, huge shift in thinking and habits. And the surgical victim, I'll call him a victim because I think it's a victim. The surgical victim has not then really found health. They've bought it. And I don't think it does them any good. And I hate to see people dying from being obese, but I still don't think that it's good or it's safe. I think it should be a very last resort. period.
Mm. And what about like jaw performance when it comes to that type of surgery? I know earlier you had mentioned about the person's core, and like when they get this type of surgery, wouldn't that make their core, you know, weaker and maybe make them a little bit prone to an injury, you know, from lifting somebody or something like that?
Okay, well, I'm not a surgeon, so I don't know exactly the procedure that they use to do a stomach staple or gastric bypass. I don't know whether they cut the abdominal muscle wall vertically or horizontally. I would guess that they would try not to disrupt the fibers which of the muscle which run up and down, so they would cut the stomach musculature, yeah, vertically. I would think that. It would be silly to do it any other way. Now, jaw performance in an EMS provider is very dependent on core strength and upper body strength and the ability to lift and aid other people. So people who have had this kind of surgery may, in fact, still be able to do the job. It wouldn't necessarily make them inherently weaker if the incision was made the way I'm talking about, up and down versus across the musculature. But if a tummy tuck was done at the same time, which it often is. I mean, a lot of times there's going to be extra skin, so they do a tummy tuck then or later, and they remove the additional tissue. Well, then they cut across the musculature in a horizontal line and then reattach the muscle fibers, and this leaves the muscle weaker. And then the person, would be more susceptible to, like, a hernia if they, in that abdominal muscle wall, if they're doing heavy lifting. And so my answer is it would depend on exactly what was done and how it was done. So
I think it goes back to what you had mentioned too, as far as more of a focusing more on a change on you know, the person's lifestyle rather than the just focusing on fixing the symptom by having, you know, the surgery.
Right, the quick fix never works.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I only have about a half hour or so that's reserved for this slot, and I don't want to keep you too long here, but I would like it if you could maybe give us, if you have any 5 tips or 6 tips that you can maybe, you know, give that to help people stay healthy and maybe keep them injury-free, that they can kind of take away from this interview and you know, maybe use every day, you know, no matter how busy their day might be.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, I would say try to really focus on eating whole, unprocessed foods, even uncooked, fresh, raw fruits and vegetables and whole grains. Think the closer the food you eat is to being picked off the vine or off the tree, the better. The more processing that's done to it, the more unhealthy it is. So the more natural you can buy your food with less processing in mills and manufacturing, the better. And then I'm a huge proponent of weightlifting, and I think everybody should aim for training with weights 3 times a week, like 30 minutes at a bare minimum. And I think that doing cardio for 20 minutes, you know, 3 times a week is huge. Like, break a sweat, start slow, work up, but really break a sweat. And I would try to focus on eating only liquid fats. Anytime you have to take in an oil or a fat, if it's solid at room temperature, don't eat it. At room temperature, if it's liquid, then you can eat it. And the last thing I would say would be, like, don't eat at restaurants, because you don't know what they're putting in your food. It could be MSG, it could be unhealthy fats, it could be lard, it could be anything, and you just don't want to take that chance, as it were, of them putting something in you that you wouldn't make the choice of when you make your own food.
Right, even if it says on the menu that it's made a certain way, or it's supposed to be the light on the light menu, but you don't know how it's getting prepared and where it's coming from.
Who actually goes back and sues restaurants for lying about that stuff?
Really? Well, I'll tell you, those are really some great tips. We're just about out of time, but before we go, I'd like to just give you an opportunity if you have any final thoughts for any of the listeners today.
Well, I just think that as providers, we all need to remember that we're really here to serve the public. And my field's a little bit different, but, you know, nothing good is ever easy, and that we really need to to not just lead by example as healthcare providers, but we also need to stay fit because it could mean life or death for them, and it's really about them.
Right. Exactly.
So.
Well, yeah. Is there anything you're working on right now that you want to maybe let the listeners know about? Maybe they can go check it out or keep an eye out for in the future.
Well, I don't know if it's really related or not, but I'm going to the Olympics in Beijing with one of the young female athletes that I train and work on, and
that's
she'll
cool.
be representing the USA on the synchronized swimming team. And so I just wanted to let folks know to support and watch the Olympics in Beijing in 2008 and pray and hope that these people, have a safe trip and a great competition, all of them, because they really are competing at a level that most people never get to, and I'm just really excited to be able to be a part of it. So
absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, Dr. Jen, it's been such a real pleasure speaking with you today, and I really, really appreciate you taking the time to come here and do this interview with me. And I think we really discussed an important and a lot of times overlooked aspect of being an EMS provider. Thanks again, and I really hope you have a great day. And I'm going to make sure that all your stuff is on the website as far as your web address and some information, about yourself and the stuff that you've been working on, so the listeners can go and check that out separately, from the interview.
Great. Yeah, it's fireagility.com. So I appreciate this, and it was great talking to you, and I'll talk to you soon.
All right, Jen, Dr. Jen, have a great day.
You too. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, that was a great interview with Dr. Jen. I hope you guys get a lot out of it. I think she gave a lot of great tips on staying healthy in EMS and some really good stuff on what to bring to work and just, some just real great information today. Again, Dr. Jen's information will be up on the website, and you can go visit her web addresses and take a look at some of the stuff she has to do. And as she mentioned too earlier, there's some great free stuff at her website you can go check out. Again, this audio session is available at the EMS Solutions website. It's at ems-safety.com/audio.htm. You can go there and listen to it, and you can also download these audio sessions to your iPods through iTunes. Until next time, I hope we'll talk to you again within another month with another great interview with another great EMS professional. Until next time, have a great day. Jim Hoffman.